Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Eric, so much to get through tonight, but you were born a couple of years after the First World War in Shoreditch, East London. Tell us about, well, Shoreditch is a very different place now than it used to be. Tell us about growing up.
Well, I grew up in the East End. I'm a proper Cockney, you know, because the Bow Bell shtick. I don't remember too much about growing up. I know that we lived... I mean, my favourite story about growing up is a word I use a lot is a word called bubbler. You know, it's an old Yiddish word.
Yeah.
And it was amazing because my mum, rest her monster soul, Eva, I remember the first time I come with that word. I'm going to school. I'm 7 years old or whatever it is, 5 years old, and she's walking me down Bethnal Green Road towards my school, which was in Mansford Street, or I think it was Mansford Street, the Lawrence. And I don't want to go to school. I don't, you know, no kid wants to go to school. And I'm saying, Mummy, please don't let me go to school, Mummy. She says, Bubbler, you have to go to school. It's, you know, if it's up to me, Bubbler, you'd be home every day for the next 93 years. But it's the law of the land. You go, but Mummy, Bubbler, I don't want to go to school, please, Mummy. Bubbler, you have to go, Bubbler. You'll make friends there, Bubbler. You'll learn things. You'll love it. And she gets to the gate of the school. She takes me in. I'm still crying. Bubbler, please don't cry. I'll be here when you come out. I think she stayed all day because I come out of school that day. And she's still there. Or she was there probably, you know, or showed up. She said, well, Bubbler, was that right? Oh, she said, you're right, Mummy. I love school. She said, and did you learn anything? I said, yeah, I learned my name was Eric. Because she called me Bubbler. I've used it ever since.
What does your dad do?
My dad was originally a presser, a Hoffman presser, which was sort of a very Jewishy thing to do. Not that he was Jewish, he'd become more Jewish than me.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, he wasn't a Yiddish man. And they went on the knowledge, which a lot of those guys did, and he's a cab driver for many years.
And what were you interested in as a youngster, let's say, through, you know, from school through to teenage? What were you interested in? Music, sport? What were your interests, Eric?
Movies, acting, love it. I went to acting school for a little while.
Did you?
I was in actually the original Oliver and the original Blitz. Lionel Bart, friend of the family, you know, got me in it. I was a terrible actor. But no, I loved it. I love the old movies, the Betty Davis. I still do now, you know. So I like movies and entertainment. I love showbiz.
And is that where you got your taste for showbiz, you think?
Probably, yeah. Must have been. It's just, you know, I love that world. And I love songs. Always love songs. You know, where people talk about artists, Johnny Ray in those days, or Dennis Lotis, or Dickie Valentine, or it might be the 50s, the Joan Regans, the Joe Staffords, the Doris Days. But I was loved them. But I was interested in who actually wrote that song, which I try and do in my radio shows, is always name check the writers. Because, you know, if you read a book, Oliver Twist, and that's Oliver Twist by Charles Dickens, you know, or whoever it may be. So I believe it's important that when you play a record or a song, you say, you don't just say that was As Long As He Needs Me, As Long As He Needs Me by Shirley Bassey, written by Lionel Bart.
Or Johnny Mercer. Or
Johnny Mercer, or Irving Berlin.
Have you tried to write a song yourself, Eric?
What?
Have you ever tried to write a song yourself?
Yes.
Was it very successful?
No.
You also got to know, and I don't know if this is one of the bridges into the world, you eventually you left school and going into the music business, you got to know Mark Bolan very early in your life. The lead singer of T-Rex, genius, of course.
I first met Mark Bolan when he was probably 13. Mark Felden, though. We used to go to a place. I then moved from the East End, and we moved to council flats in Stamford Hill, which you probably, a lot of the listeners will know I'm talking about, about the progression in those days. mean, my mum had more moves than a dartboard. I mean, you know, she was everywhere. So I always go to a place called the Stiphouse in Stamford Hill. Now, the Stiphouse was an amusement arcade. And it's Mark Bone who named it the Stiphouse because you put money in machines and you've done the machines and the this machine, that machine, some machines you won a few quid back, or a few, in those days, a few pence back. But shtip is a Yiddish word, means to take. You know, shtip him, give him a few quid, yeah. Take a shtip. So from the amusement arcade, Mark Bolan, with his creative mind, even at those days, at 13, you say, Eric, we meet, we're going to the some dance hall in St John's Wood. You know, I've got a bus of 253 or then, in those days, a 653, and we meet at the Stiphouse. So, but yeah, I was Mark Bolan's friend when we were both about 13 years old.
Okay, well,
same ages.
Killer Queen, of course, by Queen. A song, Eric, you believe is about you.
Well, I don't believe. I know it's about me.
Ah.
I know it's about me. I'm sitting here with tears in my eyes, Bubbler, because I tell you the whole story how this happened. We just come off some hit record with of Queen.
Yep.
I found out something very recently on TV. Again, not Killer Queen, but they showed the nation's favourite Queen record.
Yep.
And again, there were three records that I personally promoted. Were in those, of course, Bohemian Rhapsody was number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Seven Seas of Rye, people forget about, which I promoted. And people forget I got them on their first ever Top of the Pops, Seven Seas of Rye, because there was a strike. And of course, Killer Queen. So Killer Queen, what happened there was a very simple story. I'm in my office one day, and Freddie Mercury walks into my office with a guy called Malcolm Gray, I think his name was, his hairdresser. Well, he said it was his hairdresser.
Right.
And he walks in and he said, oh, Eric, my dear, you want to hear a new single? We've got that new record. Whatever the one before that was. They put the old Ewer machine on the old days, you know, being your days of the enemy. They stick the thing on there and the twisted thing, push the button, and he goes, here's no wish and on. And the land, the hair like Mary Antoinette, dabba, love it. Finishes, I said, Freddie Bubbler, love it, monster hit. No, you're not listening. I said, I am, I love it. No, you're not listening. I said, all right. Put it on again. What was I talking about? Have another. Let's put it on the same shtick with the machine, the tapes going on. Same lyric again, same song, of course. I said, no, I love it. What's why do I have to play again? He said, it's about you. I said, what about me? What do you mean? Now, before I tell you what he meant, because it was a known fact, people in the business those days, you won't believe it now, he was mad in love with me. He fancied me like crazy. But he could never have me because I wasn't into that. I don't knock anybody who is into that. Good luck to him. But I wasn't. And he said to me, I can't have you. And you're killing me, Freddie talking. You're killing me and I can't have you. So you're a killer queen. And the words were, he keeps Moe Shand on his fancy cabinet, which I didn't realise, at EMI. Everybody who walked in could be an unknown band or Cliff Richard
out
or
the champagne.
McCartney. Kiss, kiss, champagne. Louise, my singer, get the champagne open, Bubbler. And then hair like Mary Antoinette, because if you see some old pictures of mine, which in my book, which I wrote quite a few years ago, I permed there. Wouldn't believe it, I permed there. I've got mildly hair now. And I used to always now splash on so many, about four different Aramis, Schmaramis, and Brute, Schmoot, whatever. I plugged everything. I smelled like, and it smelled like a, whatever that word was. Yeah. And the lyric was about me. Everything that lyric said was Eric Hall. And I moved to, in those years, in the EMI years, for some reason, about five, six different places. And I think one of the lyrics relates to, you know, moving around. He never had the same address.
Okay, well, look, that's when your time, when you were a really big wheel in the music industry at EMI. Tell us about the huge wheel, Grand Fromage. Tell us about the early days when you worked in and around Denmark Street, which then was the Britain's Tin Pan Alley. It's a street, for those who are not familiar, a little street in central London by Tottenham Court Road Station, which housed all of the British music industry, and you were right at the centre of that in the early 60s.
20 Denmark Street, Mills Music, 20 Denmark Street. My very good family friend, a man called Tommy Scott, who went on to become a monster producer with Van Morrison and you know, when he produced them and wrote their songs. He got me a job through a family connection, and I started my first 15, left school at 15, I hated school. I don't get away from school. In those days, you could leave school at 15. So my first job was at Mills Music Denmark, a tea boy. You know, they say, you know, an office boy.
Yeah.
But tea boy. There was two tea boys, in actual fact. Me and a little boy called Reg, Dwight, who then became eventually Elton John.
Elton John.
So me and Reg started together, similar ages. I think he's a few months older than me. He looks it anyway. He looks much older than me, but he's a few months older than me. And we started together packing parcels and things, and then my first job. I loved it. Because Denmark Street in those days, I'm going back, you know, work it out. I was born in 47, so I'm 15. There was Perry Como from America looking for... Because that's where, as you quite rightly said, Danny Bobler, it was all the publishers. It was pretty... In this day and age, artists write their own songs. But in those days, they went out looking like tailors. They went out looking for songs. So there was Dickie Valentine. There was Patti Page. There was Al McCogan, rest of soul.
But it's also the start of what became the huge... I mean, I remember the Rolling Stones, if I understand it. They recorded their first single in a little basement studio in Denmark Street.
Regent Sound or either Central Sound, maybe.
Absolutely. And you know, David Bowie always tells he got the idea for Ziggy Stardust when he bumped into... forgive me, I can't remember the... But he was a big rock star... Vince Taylor in the street, and he said Vince was a bit out of his mind, and he thought, oh, I could do this as a character, and all the rest of it, you know, it was a big going on. But
well, I met David Bowie again when he was David Jones.
When you got up into the bigger companies, EMI was about the biggest company in this country, wasn't it? That big building down in Soho, the pictures of the Beatles hanging out of the. Tell us what you were a promoter, you were a plugger. What were you actually doing with your days, Eric?
Well, I was what occurred was just pre EMI, because it's relative to your story.
Yes.
I went to work for a man called Don Arden, I got a call from David Arden, his son, saying, Eric, you know, we started this label Jet Records, and we just re signed The Move.
And, legendary manager Don Arden, of course.
Oh, the Al Capone of Pop, that was his.
Father of. Of
Sharon Osbourne.
Of Sharon Osbourne.
Sharon Arden,
you.
Then obviously. Sharon Osbourne, who was always a nutter. She used to do Sharon Osbourne or Sharon Arden in those days. She used to, all she did was come in, do her nails and that sort of thing they use. Like
nail file,
use.
Yeah.
Yeah, doing the, no, the like rub the
suede one.
All she did was she buffed all day, she buffed. She used to answer the phones. She just, you know, she put the old things, you'd sort of plug in the old phones on the switchboard, and it was, hello, Jet Records. Don Arden, can I speak to whoever? Danny Kelly.
Yeah.
Who is it for him, Danny Kelly? Now, she wouldn't be like, you're getting this, Danny. Can I help you? She'd put you through. But as you put through, I'd sit with her like lunchtime with my sandwiches and sit there, and she'd go to me, shh, be quiet, Eric. She'd listen to everybody's conversation. She listened to everybody's conversation, Sharon Arden, Sharon Osbourne. She loved it.
So you're working for Don Arden at
Jet? I work for Don Arden at Jet. And we done re-signed The Move, I said. I think the first single we had out on the re-signing was a thing called I'll Be Over Tonight. I'll Be, you might remember it.
It's called Tonight.
Which was the biggest Tonight. We're called Tonight. Big hit, which are mine. Then we signed a band called Judas Jump with Andy Bowne and Adrian Winters. Then Adrian went on to become, get to the point. So I've done Monster World there. Monster World, having hits every day. I was known as the King Plugger. I was the Paul Gascoigne of Pluggers. I was the Governor Plugger.
Let me ask you. When I worked many years after that, Radio 1, there were still pluggers. They were pretty polite people. Used to wait outside the door for you to arrive, and they would hand you the new record and say, please play this, please play this. People tell me that in the 10 years before that, when you were doing it, there were all kinds of inducements to get people to play records. How hard was it to do your job? And did you ever have to offer people money or anything else to play the records?
Well, no, I used to do strokes. And like, I remember I tried to get a funny thing to move. Roy Wood, going a few years later, he had a record out called I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day, Wizard. And I was desperate to get, I had Top of the Pops lined up, which had done on a Wednesday, went out on a Thursday, and I had a show called, in those days, you will remember it, and a lot of listeners will too, Supersonic, which used to record again, went out on the Saturday night, and I needed one of the best plugs you could get. Weekend plugs was Family Favourites. Family Favourites. And Jack Dabbs, who was then the producer of Family Favourites, I think he passed away. If he did, you know, I'm not too upset about it. I went, phoned the appointment at Exton House, next to BH, Exton House, and I got to see, make an appointment. So I said, I must see Jack. I've got to go. I thought, Eric, get your timing right. Top of the Pops, Supersonic, Sunday, Family Favourites, monster hit. I said, yeah, I'll give you an appointment, Eric. Eric, yeah, you can see Jack on January the 9th. I said, no, are you mad? January the 9th? I said, no way. A bit like Freddie Mercury, she fancied me too. I said, Bob, I'll make it worth your while. And I gave her a part of your question. I gave her a few quid, not to get the record played, but to bring the appointment forward. Because no good judging. So she put me in about the week later, beginning of December or whatever. So I'll get to Exton House, see Jack Dabbs, and he ain't there. I said, I've got an appointment. She said, I know, she said, but Eric, so I should have phoned you. Got to cancel the appointment. He's taking his nephew or somebody to see Father Christmas. So I said, Father Christmas, I should be here. I've got this record. Well, no, but he can see you maybe after, come and see him after Christmas. I think, but Bubba, I kept him telling you, I wish it could be Christmas every day.
It's a Christmas record.
You know, the Christmas record. So I said, where's he gone? She told me, I think, Alders of Croydon. I always remember that name. So I ran, I knew him, he knew he was
big
quite
department
mean.
Store, yeah.
Monster department store. There he was quite mean. I thought, no way. How long ago I left it? About 10 minutes ago. So I run down, get a cab in Regent Street, where it was, in by BH and Exton Health. Take me to Alders of Croydon. I get to Alders of Croydon, and then I go right to the Father Christmas Brotto Schnick. And so I know he's going to take his nephew there.
Yeah.
I said to the guy, listen, do me a favour, give you a few quid, money again. I'll give you a few quid. Can I borrow your red cloak and your beard and things and whatever? I'll give him about 50 quid. Now, 50 quid in those days, 50 quid in those days, probably the whole 3 weeks of his Father Christmas money.
Yeah.
But of course he did it. So I put it there. I said, I don't need now. I looked through the sort of little curtain. When I saw Jack arrive, his little boy, because again, different days today, couldn't do it today because he, quite rightly so,
yeah.
The boy went in on his own.
Yes.
To sit on Father Christmas lap. So as soon as I see the boy coming in, I put the thing on, and the boy comes in, his nephew sits on my lap. And what do you want for Christmas? I thought, Nick, call him Bubba. Oh, no, don't call him Bubba, because he's a Jewish Father Christmas. So the guy, I say to the kid, what do you want? Oh, I want a electric, I want a shmeichum, whatever you wanted. I said, yes, you'll get all that, one condition. You see this record, you give that to that man, and you say he's got to play it. He must play it. I said, and then said out to him, Mr. Nasty, but if you don't, do that, you'll get nothing. You'll get, And he didn't give it to his, get back to the office. Of course, he calls away from me, Jack Dave. And he said, was that was you, wasn't it? I said, yes, it had to be you. He said, I'll tell you what, I can't believe you made my nephew cry. You made him cry. He said, but I got a, and again, I didn't know he knew Jewish words.
Uh-huh.
He said, because of your chutzpah, which means your cheek, I'll put the record down on Sunday.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
And I guess Eric Hall, during the early 70s, right through to the mid 70s, Led Zeppelin may have been the biggest rock band in the world, but just T-Rex were the biggest pop group. And you, as we talked about earlier in the show, you not only did you work with Mark Bolan, but you were a childhood friend of his. So you had good relations with a lot of these artists, but with Mark, I guess it was somewhat deeper, wasn't it? Because he really was your chum.
Well, we grew up together. As I said, I met Mark Bolan when he was a 13-year-old boy in Stamford Hill, the Stip House, the amusement arcade, we called it the Stip House. But he also, even then, he was going to be a star. I think it was a magazine called Tattlers. And as a 13, 14-year-old boy, he was on the front cover, modelling, you know, and he was, everybody in Stanfield knew, because his mum and dad must have bought 300 magazines and give it to everybody they knew. So, and he used to, you know, so he always was that way inclined to be somebody. He weren't just a young boyfriend, a nice Yiddish boy. My mate for years, I miss him a lot, that's a fact. I was with him and 2 hours before he got killed.
I mean, as we say, he was still a massive, massive star in September of 1977. He had his own TV show, of course, going then. And people often forget that Mark Bolan was one of the very first people who insisted all the punk rock bands went on his TV program. They were on his program and all the rest of it. September 77, obviously at the very height of his career, he was killed. You were with him that night.
Well, going back to you talking about his series, Mark Time, we didn't fall out over that, but there was a Granada TV. Used to, I think it was either a Wednesday or a Thursday night. They used to call it their kids' pop spot.
Yeah.
And they had, I think, the Bay City Rollers did the pop spot originally. Then it was a group called whatever it was, Arrows.
Yeah.
You might remember the old band of mine, Rack Records, and that's the Rollers. And then Muriel Young phoned me. She said, Eric, need your help. I've heard of... Bay City Rollers are so big, they can't do it anymore. You know, quite rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, Mark Bolan. She said, Eric, great idea, but I heard that he's back from America. He's been away for a couple of years. And he's like, you know, very, very large. He's put a lot of weight on and everything. I think, I know, but probably be put, guarantee you, if you give him that spot, I said, I will put him on a health farm and da-da-dum and we'll do everything. We get him when he said, we don't shoot for about another 3 months. Oh, we get up. We did. You know, we did all that. But now we've got the show. She saw him. She loved him. And she's slim as he was in that Mark Time show. And we had, like, all those, the Clash, the Smash, and everybody.
The Clash, the Dam were on it.
The Dam, you know, everybody.
On, yeah.
And finally, the most famous, I've jumped forward on the story, was when we've got David Bowie on with him. We've got old mate of mine as David Jones, the old Denmark Street Dave, and also his monster mate. He did it. And the funny thing was, Mark fell off stage, if you ever see that clip. But just to go back pre that. So I said, Mark, we've got the show. I said, great. And suddenly, he felt that stardom back again. And he went, great. Well, I want to do, I want to get all these new bands on. I said to Mark Popola, let's just be thankful we got the show. Let the producer produce the acts. We can just, you know, no, I'll only do it after I work my butt off getting the show, begging Muriel Young, begged her to make him. You know, I said, we've got like a, whoever it's like, Mud, Schmud, whoever it might be.
No, you didn't want that.
Hot chocolate. No. But he was right, and he got his own way.
And he was right.
He was monster right.
Tell us about the night Mark died.
Well, Gloria Jones,
his girlfriend,
also a talented lady.
She made the original version of Tainted Love that went on to number one.
She wrote the song.
Absolutely.
She wrote it.
Absolutely.
Which Mark Allman, Armin Schmarman, what his name is, did years later. So she's in America, and I stayed in his house nearly every night. He couldn't be on his own. He could be, and it was terrible. He would say to this Mark Bolan, Eric, you stay tonight, don't go home tonight, or you can go to no, Sunday, I'm going to go home and see my mum, rest her soul. He said, because David Niven, Roger Moore, and Enid Blyton are all coming from, like, he come out with these names and monster names, all, and you think, no, Mark Bolan is talking to me, you know, and we grew up together.
You can't
schmooze a schmoozer, and you can't bullshit a bullshitter, or kid a kidder. But as it happens, if you did go, then probably there was maybe not all those names, but there might be a David Niven there or a Ringo Starr or somebody. So you kind of went because one of them may have turned up. So we would become that close. So now he's sitting in my office. Well, me and my shadow, wherever I went, he went. Night and day was with me. We monster mates. So he said, Eric, got some good news. I thought, get out of the shower, ready to jump in my company car to go back to EMI. I've got the, Gloria sent me a message on, texting, another text, fax, not fax, text, the machines, text machine.
A fax machine, yeah.
No, teletext.
Oh, teletext, text, oh, not blimey, teletext. Right.
Text, whatever it was. That's, got it. She's arriving tonight, and I'm putting in the plane, and we're going to go meet her at the airport, like we. Well, no, you go. I said, well, I can't drive, that could never drive. So we agreed that we would go to Morton's in Berkeley Square to wait for her to arrive. She only got about 10 o'clock, and Richard Jones, her brother, was going to pick her up, Gloria's brother, bring her to Berkeley Square, London, and we're going to meet there. So we get there, and I'm going to get home already, and, you know, I've been 2 weeks with him. I said, Mark, I'm going to go home tonight, like midweek, whatever the day was. No, you're coming back, because you're coming back. We had a few drinks and things. Without saying what those things were, not for me, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to go home. Now, if anybody listening knows Morton's, and you probably know it, there's a toilet at the back of the club, also the emergency exit. So I thought, whispers to Gloria, I'm going to schmice. I said, well, no, he won't, I'm going to go the back way. So he won't see me go. I've got to get, you know, I want to go home already. See my mum. And I did that. I went out the back way. So I get to the stand there. It's about 1:01 in the morning now. So I get in my car, Berkeley Square it was parked, driving home, got to Loughton in Essex, in those days where I lived. My parents went to bed, got out of bed, put the radio on, as you know, to drive back to London, to Manchester Square in central London. The radio's on, and it's the 8 o'clock news, and dabba dabba dum, and Syria Shmiria, dabba dubba dee, and dabba dum. And also, early hours this morning, Mark Boland killed in a car crash. Why did he crash my car? You know? It was like, it's like, you know, it's like minutes away, because as a lot of people listen, and you know, but you don't know, maybe I'm wrong, because when you had a good night's kip, you kind of, you know, you wake up, it's kind of like minutes later. So it was like going to bed, getting up, and the first thing I heard was Mark Boland was killed. Because she was driving, he couldn't drive. Yeah, I thought to myself, you know, maybe.
She was driving them, she had a Mini in there.
Mini, I used to drive the car. Yeah. I drove the car every night for 2 weeks. That's what I'm saying. I left a bit out. And I thought, well, maybe if I would have gone with him, I would have drove that car. If I'm not a drinker, I've never been a big drinker. So now I'm blaming myself, you know.
But you don't blame yourself, surely.
No, not now, but I still think about it. I saw Gloria recently at this thing is Shepherd's Bush in London Theatre. They had like a show about Mark Boland. Mm-hmm. Lots of sort of biggish names were there to celebrate Mark's life.
Do you miss him still?
Think about him all the time, yeah. Not all the time, but I miss him.
Yeah. Sometime around that time, in the mid-70s rather, October 76, punk rock was happening. Everyone knows I went to school with John Lydon. The kids in central London were making this thing happen. But it really came to public attention during an interview on a very sedate early evening Thames television show with a man called Bill Grundy, the Today Show. It was like a news and current affairs show. John Lydon and the rest of the Sex Pistols, Johnny Rotten, went on television, behaved not too badly, but by 76 standards, terribly. You set that interview up.
Yes, and the funny thing about that interview was that, being a plugger, we had booked on the show a video by Queen.
Right.
A Queen video. I forget what the record was now.
Sure.
In those days, you had to get MU clearance. Because the MU, you would know from your NME days.
Yeah.
And I got a call about 3:30 from Mike Housego, Thames Television, who was the producer of the Today Show.
Right.
Eric said, we've got a problem. That video we're going to use tonight, it's not ain't got MU clearance. I said, I'm sorry, Mike. He said, no, not down to you. Well, no way, you ain't a promotion manager. It is down to you, but, you know, but don't worry. You got anybody else we can use? I said, well, not really. He says to me, what about the Sex Pistols I keep reading about? You just signed them. I said, well, you know, yeah, but they're not, what, say they're musically talented and whatever. And being named Bill Grundy, because I just get a lot of acts on this show as a plugger, I said, you know, they may be hard to handle for Bill, something it was like. And faster than that, Bill used to go to lunch about 11 o'clock in the morning and lunch and come back, you know, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. So I thought, we do it. So I phoned Mark McLaren up. They were rehearsing that night, that day in Hammersmith somewhere, in not far from Euston Studios, Euston Towers. And I said, Mark, we've got a TV for the boys today. I knew that he wouldn't want to do it. Oh, great, Top of the Pops, I think it's a Wednesday. Well, no. Supersonic, well, no. Dan, well, no. Lift Off with Aisha, whatever it was, well, no. Well, what the hell is it? I said, the Today Show on Thames. Oh, I wasn't doing that. We're doing our tour. I said, no, you've got to do it. It's got a monster plug, which I, you know, just said it. I've been pushing for them to do it. And they didn't want to do it. None of them wanted to do it. You've got to do it. You've got to do it. It's a monster plug. Great plug. I've had acts on, which is a lie. I've had acts on that show before. They've done the plug. They've had number one records. Who? Don't worry, who? They'll do it. Do it. All lies. And they did it. And he said, on one condition, if you've got to do like you do for other acts, like we've mentioned before in another chat, is that if they do it, I want a limousine to pick them up, all that sort of so-called image, and champagne and smoked salmon sandwiches to take them. I said, it's a 5-minute drive. No. And he did it. He didn't want to do it, and that's what happened. I did the show.
Well, look, the Sex Pistols turned up with an entourage of young punks on a most sedate mid-afternoon show, early evening show on Thames, and this is just a flavour of how it went.
Beethoven, Mozart, Bach and Brahms have all died.
Bears,
really? Oh, what are we saying,
wonderful
sir?
Wonderful people.
Are they?
Oh, yes, they really turn us on.
What do they do?
Well, suppose they turn other people on.
That's just their talk.
It's what?
Nothing, a rude word. Next question.
No. What was the rude word? Was it really? Good heavens, you frightened me to death.
Oh, all right. So
what about you girls behind?
I'm like your dad, isn't he, this
geezer? Are you,
With your granddad.
Are you worried or are you just enjoying yourself?
Enjoying myself.
Are you?
Yeah.
That's what I thought you were doing.
Always wanted to meet you.
Did you really?
Yeah.
We'll meet afterwards, shall we?
You dirty son. You dirty old man.
Well, keep going, Chick. Keep going. Go on, you've got another 5 seconds. Say something outrageous.
You dirty...
Go on, again.
You dirty...
What a clever boy.
What a...
Well, that's it for tonight.
Bill Grundy there with the Sex Pistols and a female voice that he was flirting with called Susie Sue of Susie, Leslie of Susie and the Banshees, a huge band in their own right.
Love or hate the Sex Pistols, and I appreciate now, years later, they actually were good musicians. They were good. But he did Golden, didn't he?
Oh, he was doing deliberately.
What professional presenter on TV or radio, if somebody does swear by accident, softly, if you heard it, if I swore now, which I wouldn't, God forbid,
I apologise very briefly, move on.
Not to actually say, go on, you can be more outraged than that.
The point was, it made the Sex Pistols very famous, but it also finished Bill Grundy's career to all intents and purposes,
didn't it? Quite rightly so. He wasn't a very nice man.
No.
I shouldn't say that, bless his soul. But anyway, the following day, as well as a monster plug, they were in every paper, not only in this, you know, John Lydon's your friend, within every paper, front page, not only here, all over Europe.
Yeah.
And to be fair, then Malcolm McLaren phoned me up from his office in Denmark Street, an office in those days, and he said, for the wrong reasons, you were right. I thought, what are you talking about? It was a monster plug.
Eric, let's talk about your latter time in the music industry. You worked for ATV Music, and you were the managing director of Rocket Records, which was the company that Elton John set up for his own records and other bands. I mean, you're right at the very top of the music industry by this stage.
Well, I was working for, as I said, ATV, a man called Lou Gray, or now become Lord Lou Gray by the time I was Sir, then Lord. A big job I had, and we was every whatever it was, 6 months or whatever, we was always voted physically the most popular and busiest music publisher. We had Boney M, we had, you name them, we had them in the 70s and early 80s and late 60s. So John Reed, who was out as manager in those days, said, you've got to come and work for us. You know, we need help. We need help. You've got a great, what you did at EMI, now you're doing at ATV. You're a great finder of artists, songs, publishing songs, to know good writers and to know good artists. You know, because a lot of my artists I did sign for other companies like ATV and like EMI was all unknown when I signed, like Pilot, like Cockney Rebel, like Queen, whoever it might be. And he gave me a most amazing wage. He offered me something like four times more than I was getting, and a big white Daimler Jag. So I took the job. So I've now become chairman of Rocket Music, his publishing arm, big music, his publishing arm, his personal Elton John, and Rocket Records. And the first thing I did, I signed a lady called Judy Zook. I signed a group called Blue, boys from Scotland, which you mentioned, like them. And of course, Lambrettas, a group called Lambrettas.
Yeah.
From Brighton they were, and they called the Lambrettas, with the official first Pete Waterman stroke Pete Collins production, which I, you know, made them do it. Because when they come to me about the Lambrettas signing them, they did a version of a Poison Ivy, the old, you know, Libra and Stoller shtick.
Coasters thing, yeah.
Yeah, great version. Which you do know, they cover the schmothers. So we did that. And that was my first job. And then because my job was originally to come into Rocket Music and record to bring new artists in and break them. So Rocket, in those days, every time Rocket was in the chart, Elton John album, Elton John CD, or not CD, but
single,
Schmingle, everything, Elton. And they wanted to know, you know, bring Eric Owen, he's the one who can get find acts for us. I did find acts, hits after hit after hit. And covers too, in publishing it's very important to get covers. I remember phoning up, not on a sideline, very important, phoning Elton John up one day, who was living in the Saint-Tropez then, still got his house there as far as I know. Elton, we've got some great news. What's that? I said, covers, we've got an album coming out, All Your Songs, a piano player. Oh, marvellous, my dear. Of course, I had two names. Elton, a bit like Freddie Mercury used to do, all his male friends, gay or straight or whatever, had ladies' names.
Right.
My name was, with Elton started, to be fair, was either Sophie Hall, which is a nice friendly one because of Sophie Tucker, or Annie Hall, which was, you know, the Woody Allen movie. So Well, what is it, Sophie? What is it? Who is it, Sophie? I said, Bobby Crush.
Oh, God.
Exactly what he said. You must have read the script. Oh, but he didn't use the word God. He wanted something a bit more stronger. What are you talking about, Annie? So suddenly I was Annie. You've got to stop it. I said, I can't. You know, I've done the deal with Celebrity Records, the man called Mike Ashwell, who owns the label. He's doing it. The studio's all done. It's coming out in a couple of months' time. You've got to stop it. You've got to stop it. I said, no, I ain't going to stop it. You can't stop it anyway, because as you may know, and a lot of your listeners will know, once a song's recorded by anybody, anybody can record it. You want to change the lyric or change the tune, you're going to get the publisher or the writer's permission.
But you can cover it.
But you can cover it once it's released by somebody.
Yeah.
I said, we can't stop it anyway, Bubba. He's going to do your song and this and song for Guy. And no. And eventually he was upset because I got sacked because of that Bobby Crush got me the sack. And the strange thing is that the only time I've ever been sacked, well, that's not true. I once got sacked by my first ever job, funny Elton John again, was I, the boss Cyril G of Mills Music, I sent his bowler hat to America. That's another story.
Is that a sacking offence?
Well, it is the way I did it, yeah. Because it's... but that's another punchline. That's a punchline, that story. So going back to Elton John Rocket...
Because you allowed an album covers by Bobby Crush, who was a very uncool artist, and that's probably what was upsetting Elton.
Yeah.
You find yourself out of work for the first time or out of the music business. So how do you find your way into footballing, Eric? Because there's about a year, is there?
Well, yeah, but so I did, which not a lot of people know this, is that because I love drafting, I went on the buses. I was a bus conductor for about a year.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a handbrake turn.
It was a handbrake turn, but and it was on the 38 A's from Loudon Station to Victoria. We never stopped at a stop. Because right when I learned the code, if you ring the bell three times, ding, 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 that to tell your driver, just carry on.
Well, you're a good bus conductor.
I'm saying I was worse. I didn't pick up any passengers. I didn't pick up... As we left the depot, I used to give him three bells. Ding, ding, ding. Next stop, ding, ding, Buckhurst still. Ding, 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 went on. Ding, Woodford, Wales. Ding, ding, ding. We never stopped. I went to Victoria and just sat in the seat smoking a cigarette.
Well, look, we've got to bring some order to chaos here. I know that the footballer who introduces the world of football, he's here as a guest. It is the former Spurs. He played about 3,000 games for Spurs in the 70s and 80s. I'm delighted to say we're joined now by Steve Perryman. Hello, Steve.
Good evening, mate. How are you?
Very, very good indeed. And Steve, you've done a lot of good things for football and for society, but you also brought Eric Hall in as a football agent. How did that happen?
Well, you can't do it all right all your life.
I'm blaming you personally, Steve.
So, in my memory, I think we all got invited, the Spurs team, to a charity do, I think in Epping, for the Epping Forest Country Club. And, during the evening, you meet various odd people. That's what you're there for.
Odd people, like Eric Hall, yes.
Monster odd.
Particularly odd. Anyway, I got talking to him, and... of course, I was made aware of Eric's sort of link with the entertainment business and what he'd been through in his record years and dealing with star names and all of that. And just by coincidence, I'd had a letter some few days before offering me a book deal, autobiography.
Right.
Which, to be fair, you know, I know my football and I know my football strengths and weaknesses and whatever. And one of my abilities is I know when I'm I know what I know, and I don't get involved in things that I don't know. So I thought, well, the way the conversation was going, Eric could definitely help me in that respect because of all his sort of experience. And so I said, Eric, you know, what about we work together? I'm sure Eric offered me that as well. And, you know, let's start on this one and see how it goes from there. And because I was at the end of my... coming to the end of my career, obviously, you know, things like this book deal were going to come up, and where are you going to go next after a playing career? Are you going to stay in the game, or is there another avenue for me? And of course, I thought with someone like Eric and his vast sort of knowledge of what's going on outside of football, because, you know, I knew enough about that world, that, you know, it could be a good partnership, and that's how it turned out.
Yes, Stevie, my story is slightly different, but I like your ones better. So I've got to use your one in future. No, but no, my, you're right, the venue was probably right, but I, from my recollection, is that Garth Crooks kept coming up to me and saying, I know you, and I was saying, well, I don't know where you know me from. It then worked out where he did know me from, and you kept on saying, oh, I didn't know then, as you know, I knew you was a footballer, and saying, like, leave him, Garth, leave him alone, drive the man mad. But then I said, well, I've worked out, we do know each other, I go to a club in the West End called Monkbury's in German Street. Yeah. Danny Kelly's nodding because he knows he remembers it. And he'd seen me, not he knew me, but I've been there, kind of name drop, been sitting there with like Britt Eklund and Ross Stewart and Mark, you know, whoever it might be. So that's my selection. And you then said to me, you ever thought about getting involved with football? You know, and I said,
yeah,
and I
did, well, yeah,
kind
that's
of
about right.
About right. And I said to you, that silly joke was so, I'm going to try again on Danny Kelly. Nobody ever laughed. I thought I could never be a football agent, bubbler. You said, why? I think you should do free kicks. You should be charging for them.
Oh, okay.
And a silly joke. And we then we sat down and we, as you said, so I said, look, no contract then, Steve. You said what you just said to Danny. Yeah, let's try it. Let's do it. Work together on certain projects. And I said, well, look, no contract. You know, I'm one of those guys. I've been in the record business from all my life. If it works, you ain't going to want to get rid of me. And if you do want to get rid of me, they won't want you anyway if it works. If it don't work, and we've never had, from day one till today, never had anything in writing. We just did things for you. And I love you. I really love you.
And never a crossword, I've got
never
to say.
A crossword.
But
never.
Steve, that's lovely to hear the two of you are having a big cuddle up there. But Steve, surely in your role as director of football down there at Exeter, every time you see a football agent walk through your door, you must regret the day that you put Eric Hall on this path.
No, absolutely not, because I'm aware of you know what's out there and what agents should be doing for you and what they shouldn't be doing for you, and areas they get involved with and where they're right or whatever. You know, I do question and answers all the time, particularly with Spurs groups around London.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of the questions is there a need for agents? And I say, well, if you had a 17-year-old talented kid, you know, just reaching fruition and clubs won't sign him, would you let him in a room on his own with, for instance, Alan Sugar or Abramovich or those, you know, it doesn't have to be those sort of names, but the people at the top of those clubs with all their experience with a 17-year-old kid? No, you wouldn't put him in, would you? And there's nothing wrong with a bit of advice. And, you know, I have to say that from a football perspective, of course, Eric owned up. He don't really know too much about football. But he knows the business side of things. And from a footballer's perspective, you do need that sort of advice. And so he was invaluable. So, yeah. It was all good, yeah.
Steve, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Steve, I'll see you soon, Bubba. And thank you for coming to my lunch last month.
It was brilliant, and you were well respected there, and that was to see.
That's the great Steve Perriman,
of course. Bless you. Love him.
Wonderful footballer in his time.
Thanks to him for joining us here.
Well, he's the one who put you on the road to being a football agent, and next we will be discussing your time in that role in much more detail. Eric, we heard in the last part of the first half of the show about your move from music into football and how it came about. How big a difference did you find? How different are the two worlds?
Well, I think when I moved to football, I didn't find a lot of difference. And I'll tell you why I say I didn't find difference. Because I, from a showbiz life, record business life for a 15-year-old boy, you know, in the music business, I treated footballers like pop stars, like actors. You know, so it was different. So I remember I phoned Steve Perriman one day and said, Steve, we're doing Cracker Jack next week. He said, pardon? You mean that show that Michael Aspel does? I can remember when Eamon Andrews did it. I said, yeah, Cracker Jack.
It's Friday. It's 5 o'clock.
It's Friday.
And
it's Cracker Jack. So, and then and punchlines and doing all sort of shows. Where you would plug a record, I was promoting, getting commercials. I got ready to talk about radio. I went with Radio Luxembourg and gave him an idea for Steve Perriman, did a radio show. The idea was, I think pre the other TV shows, this similar idea was, I said to Ken Evans, who, and Alan Keane, who were then, you know, Mr. Luxembourg, I got this idea for, what do you mean, a footballer? I don't know, but it's my idea. You have a footballer on, who, and you pick a year every year, or a sports therapy football. Mm-hmm. For instance, with my hypothetical year when I was plugging them to do the series for Steve Perriman, 1966, the year we won the World Cup. So you'll have Stevie doing the show, but he's memories of that year.
Yep.
The hits of that year.
Yeah.
And my guess will be he can get Bobby Moore, rest his soul.
Yeah.
You know, was alive then, or Jeff Earth, or Martin Peters. So he's guess to be somebody relative to that year we're talking about.
Yeah.
They love the idea. We did a 12-week series.
Yeah.
For Radio Luxembourg.
Well, listen, we'll talk about some of the other people you represented over the years. One player who worked with you throughout his career, of course, that saw him win both the Premier League and caps for England as well, is the former Blackburn and Spurs and much else player, former Spurs manager very recently, Tim Sherwood. Hi, Tim.
How you doing, Danny?
Really, really good. According to Eric Hall, he's a fantastic agent. Would you agree?
The best.
He's the best agent I've ever had, Osa.
How did you come to fall into the clutches of Eric Hall?
I can't remember, actually. I don't know. It was so long ago, I can't remember how we actually met, but someone introduced me to him, and it was probably being out one night, and I just thought he was great value. You know, you got so many agents these days, you know, or them days, telling you, buy this insurance, buy that. They all want to spend your money. Eric just wanted me to move clubs and earn some money, you know, so... So that was what attracted me to him. And from there onwards, I stuck with him as an agent throughout my playing career. And he was more of a mate than an agent to me. So I just kept him along. He was good value. You know, I always like to giggle. I didn't suffer fools easily. And I still don't. And I just thought a lot of them were frauds. You know, a lot of them were dressing it up to be what they are. Eric was what he was. You know, and he would tell you himself that he was no expert on football. And I honestly believe an agent don't have to be, you know, but so many of them tried to be the expert on everything, you know, and it wasn't straight, wasn't honest. And I felt Eric certainly wasn't straight and honest, but I liked it.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, Tim, in that you see so many of the agents now, and they've got their iPads and their very posh suits and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But Eric wasn't like that. He was more about personality as well as his contacts, of course. But there wasn't. I mean, did it bother you, Tim, that, you know, you're a very famous footballer at the time, as you say, captain of the team that's winning the championship in England, that Eric Hall was almost a bigger celebrity by the end of it than some of his players?
It was. I mean, he was the only agent who needed an agent who I've ever met, you know, so it didn't bother me. No, of course not. No, you're happy for him to take the attention away. When you go into negotiations, and it weren't often we did it, and we didn't enforce a move just so he could earn a few quid off me. If he felt I weren't happy and we spoke about it and we needed a move, I'm one of them players that I recognised, and Eric didn't pretend to be the agent who can get you a move. When I say to a lot of boys, especially when I was doing a development phase at Tottenham,
yes,
your agents can't get you moves. You have to get yourself a move by what you do on the pitch. Then when you get the people interested, your agent will take over from there. You know, he can't play the game for you, thankfully.
And Tim, when, you know, as you say, the shoe is very much on the other foot now, you're a manager yourself. When you see an agent come to the door to talk to you about something, and of course, you know, these things, this is the way the game works, do you ever think back to your time with Eric and wonder how Eric would have handled it?
Yeah, but it was easy with Eric because he always knew. I mean, I think he always said to me more than anyone that you can't kid a kidder, and he knew that he couldn't kid me. And I was always very honest with him, and if he started to talk some rubbish, what I didn't believe, I would tell him straight away, Eric, don't try and justify yourself. You know, I like you for what you are, and just keep to that. And we had a good relationship because of that. Now, I see agents coming in now, and I tell them exactly the same. When they start talking about football, and this one should tuck in there, and that one needs to push on, I just say, look, be quiet, mate. With respect, you don't know the game. Let me do all the logistics on the football side. You just crunch the numbers and get the best deal for your player. But they're deluded, some of them, because they think that their player is the new Lionel Messi or Ronaldo, and you know, and I tell him the truth. I tell him exactly where I think the player is in my eyes, and where he if he's got a future at the football club or if he's got a future elsewhere.
I tell you, Tim, thanks for doing this shtick for me. But I'm going to tell the audience, same Danny, really, the great story about you. What an honourable, lovely girl. I love you, Mia and all the family. We've gone to Derby to do a deal with Arthur Cox.
Right.
True story.
Yeah.
True story. He never tells people this, but I'm going to tell you, which is a great guy, Biff. It must have been the early days of the mobile. It must be, because on the way back on the train to London, We've done a deal, we've agreed. We're going to go back the following day. Not me. Medical sign. He's a Derby player. The phone goes, it's Kenny Dalglish. Eric, what's happening with Tim? I said, well, what do you mean, what's happening? You saw teletext, what were the early days Sky News?
CFAX.
It's CFAX, Schmeesfax, what an old shtick. I said, he's going to Derby, he's medical tomorrow. I want him here at Blackburn. He'd just taken over at Blackburn then, Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, look, I don't know what deal you've done, Eric. Whatever it is, I'll give you, I won't mention figures,
sure,
much, much more money, much more this, much more that. Right, well, I'm tempted. And we'll take care of you, Eric. Robert Corr and Jack Walker will take care of you. And I'm tempted because I do like making a few quid.
Mm-hmm.
But also, good club, new challenge, Kenny Dalglish, the governor, managing Blackburn. Mm-hmm. What did he, I told him right away, Tim, we're on the train. What did Tim Sherwood say? Can't do it. I said, I'm joining Derby. He says, right, Ken, so fast, right, Tim, I can't, Eric, I know you mean well, I can't. I've agreed to join, I've shook Dave's
arm. Shook his hand, yeah.
We've got a deal. Get back on the train, you're right. Phone goes again, it's Arthur Cox. Eric, behave yourself. It's been sad. Behave yourself, Eric. What are we talking about, Arthur? You can't say no to Kenny Dalglish. Yeah. I'm telling you, I don't want that player anymore, Tim Sherwood. Let him go and see Kenny Dalglish. Is that right, Tim?
Yeah, he put me on the phone and Arthur said to me, I understand you've had the big man on the phone. I said, yeah. He said, if you're my son, I'm telling you to go to Blackburn.
Wow.
I think he must have seen some extra footage of me and didn't fancy me and wanted to get out at the last minute.
Yeah, maybe so, Tim. He saw something other than what Eric had originally showed him. Listen, well, the rest of it is history, of course. You go on to Captain Blackburn to the league title.
More than that, Danny.
Yeah.
Sorry, more than that. We played them in the playoff semi-final to get promoted to the Premier League. I mean, it's a proper sliding door story, because it could have gone the other way.
Yeah.
I mean, they've never recovered since then.
Absolutely.
We ended up playing them in the semi-final, two-legged semi-final, to reach the Premier League, and we beat them in the semi-final. We beat Leicester in the final and reached the Premier League, and then the rest is history after that, obviously.
Incredible. Listen, thank you, Tim. Thank you for coming on, just giving us a flavour of what it's like to work with Eric Hall. Talk to you again soon, I hope.
Cheers, mate. Take care.
Love you. Bye, thank you.
Tim Sherwood, what an amazing story that is, because maybe Derby would have gone on to win the title.
Well, there you go. That's why we never, ever... He's never ever spoke about that story publicly.
Incredible.
I thought because I love your company, I love doing this show, so I thought it's about time we told the world
it is.
We're talking about greedy footballers, maybe not greedy.
No.
He says no, Kenny.
Honourable.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Derby fans will be sickened to hear that story, but that's the way of it. You also worked with Terry Venables.
Well, not really. I did. Remember, I met Terry. We're going back now. I'm 15 years old. I work at Mills Music, packing parcels with me and Elton John, Reg Dwight, and one of the regular people every day after training, Chelsea, which then in those days, Georgie Graham, Alan Harris, Ronnie Harris, Johnny Hollins, Terry Venables, Ken Shilletto, all those days, whether the year was 60-something,
mm-hmm.
after they finished training, Chelsea, they'd all go to Denmark Street. Another place to be. It was such a buzzy, lovely street show, and Terry loved showbiz. So I first met Terry when I was 15, in Denmark Street. He'd go to the offices, a man called Pat Sherlock. He'd go there, and Pat Sherlock would buzz me, or Reg, the boys are here, go to Julie's Cafe in Denmark Street. Tea, for four teas, coffee, a bacon sandwich, and we do that. And Terry loved it. We got him doing he finished up doing demos, records, in the demos, the studio mm-hmm. we mentioned before.
Yeah.
So I met Terry when I was 15. So when I started with his agent, I was his agent, but he was a mate, really, just to have done deals for.
Eric, you quickly established yourself with a group of players, but of course, in the golden age of football agency, I guess you'll make up the rules as you go along. Some very big chairmen, some very big managers to deal with. What do you remember? Who were the people who were hard to deal with? Who were the people too easy to deal with?
Well, none of them were really easy to deal with.
Really?
I remember the sort of Ken Bates, for instance, who was then owned Chelsea before the new Chelsea people. And a great line about me, because we're in the deal, we're renegotiating Dennis Wise's contract.
Right, you're a Dennis's agent.
Already a player, and Dennis Wise's agent I am. We're renegotiating. We're in his office, and there's Colin Hutchinson, who was then the
CEO,
secretary, whatever
yeah.
they call him now, the club secretary, Ken Bates, me and Dennis Wise, and I'm doing my shtick, and I'm doing my shtick, and I'm talking, and dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba, I want this, him to stay this club, another 3 years, dabba dooba dib, I'm chatting away, and suddenly he gets up, puts his coat on Ken, and walks out, he's going to walk out, I said, where are you going? Then Eric, I said yes to everything 20 minutes ago. You're the only agent I know who can't take yes for an answer. It was a great line.
And when you're an agent at that level, do you find you end up working with certain clubs and there are other clubs that won't touch you? How did that work, Eric?
No, I think it's worth. I mean, most of the clubs didn't like to work with me because I was good at my job, if I'm being monster honest.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like everything, I'm sure in your business, all our businesses, if they wanted you, the club, the chairman, they would work with Adolf Hitler or Gaddafi, God forbid. Because, you know, if they wanted the player to re-sign a new contract or bring a player in, they will. I do say to my players, Harry, I'm not sure, don't get too heavy. I said, Bubbler, we're only here because they've bought you. They're not going to let this deal fall out of bed because of, you know, me. So, no player club would ever refuse to work me. So, for the latter years with Alan Sugar at Spurs, Terry Venables, or another great story with Sam O'Mahon, I took a player, I think, Gary Blissett, to Wimbledon in those days. One of my little crazy things. And it's half true because I had a call, I think, from Sheffield United, Dave Bassett, who just took over as manager.
Sure.
Similar stories I've tell all the time. Eric, you know what's happened with Blissett? He said, well, we won. I said, well, no, I can't. So we go see Sam O'Mahon, myself, Gary Blissett, Sam, and he's been lovely. Reg, I forget his name there, the club secretary. He was a bit of a stutterer, a bit of a twitterer, very nervous man. Said, yeah, all right, do that. So we're in there, and Sam, I want that. Can I give him this? No. You mustn't say that. She's a puncher, Sam O'Mahon. She said, literally, he loved me. We were mates, really. It would hit me. How could you say that to me? You are like my brother. How do you ask me for money? And you're Jewish, and I'm a Palestinian, and you must not do this. I said, no, Sam, it's business. No. He was very funny, lovely. Loved him. If you're listening, Sam, I love you. And he would, so one day, we just can't do a deal. So I said, I can't help it, Sam. Let's go. Come on. So we're walking down. I thought, come. And he said to me, you will come back. I said, no. Well, mate, I don't know. As I get to the door coming out of Wimbledon in those days, this Reg guy, I forget his second name mm-hmm. there. I said to Reg, he went down to get a cup of tea or something. So where are you going? I said, no, I can't deal with a man. He's mad as a march. I can't deal with him. Come on, Gary. I said, and by the way, Reg, what's the quickest way to get to Sheffield? Oh, he went. We got the car to drive out of the car park. Before the car started the engine, Sam may have come running down and said, no, you're right. You got what you wanted, Eric.
Yeah.
One of my bluffs. My greatest other bluff was really to my bluff. He's not your very quick question.
Yeah, go on.
But John Aldridge, both Rockford United.
Yeah.
And Liverpool want to sign him. There is no way, whoever the manager was, knows, I forget, mm-hmm. wouldn't let him go. He put transfer requests in day after day, tore him up, put them in. You're going nowhere, John Aldridge. You're staying here.
Probably Maurice Evans, was it?
Maurice Evans. You're going nowhere. I said, so I thought he's never going to accept his. So I come up with a great coup. Just an idea. What you've got to do as an agent, too, like PR man, his little ideas. That day, the midweek match, they're playing Queen's Park Rangers at Queen's Park Rangers. So I phoned up a guy called Brian Warner, who was then working for The Sun.
Great journalist, yeah.
Great journalist, great man.
Yeah.
I said, Brian, do you want an exclusive? Well, yeah, I said, John Aldridge, begging Harry hates it in Liverpool, wants to get away, and dabba dabba doom, and he really wanted to get away. Liverpool has told his agent, not that I wanted a name check, that they would definitely take him. You know, they've already discussed terms with the agent, but they won't let him go. Play QPR, I think they got beat that night. Following day, front page, a bit of John Aldridge. Turn to page da 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 do. I turn to that page, double page exclusive, John Aldridge. My hell at Oxford, my knocked them terribly. Now, that same morning, Robert Maxwell, I was in rest his soul, he was a very nice man,
mm-hmm.
phoned up Maurice Evans.
Because he's the owner of Oxford, of course, yeah.
Owner of Oxford, and said, listen. He said, what's this player I'm reading about? Hates the club. He said, tell him to off, get him out. I want him out, get rid of him right away. Now, that's a good story, but my reason why I did it that way was he wasn't that caring about Oxford, Robert Maxwell. I had an exclusive story in the Sun newspaper. He owns the Daily Mirror. As we copped the needle. That was our little plan.
Right.
I thought the only way to get John Aldridge from that club is to get Robert Maxwell involved. Not to say, John, Robert, I need your help.
No.
Upset Robert Maxwell. So that's my little coup too.
Well, how did you get banned at Spurs? Why did you get banned from Tottenham?
Well, a very simple answer. I was, as we said earlier, is that I was Terry Venables' mate since I was 15. Done a lot of work for him, business work, negotiated his BBC TV deals and all those things, which are all, you know, other things I did.
Mm-hmm.
Got his own column, whatever I did. So he brought me to Spurs, and I, with Neil Ruddock, we arranged, Neil was very pro Terry, we arranged like a demonstration outside his house in Chigwell with all the wives of the players. They just stood there and you know, putting things on in big white paint on his beautiful £10 million house. We want tea, no sugar. All those little, which is my slogan, quite clever, Bobbler.
Oh, yeah.
I say again, no sugar. Tea, no sugar. And I caused a lot of trouble. So Kennedy goes to court, then Terry, and he loses. And because of my relationship, then as I got back to my office those days, I had a telex waiting for me from Peter Barnes, who was then the club secretary, saying that Eric, unfortunately, after 2 years, he lost the case, and he was sent goodbye Terry Venables. And it was a, as of today's situation, you are now no longer welcome at Spurs or any Tottenham or anything. So I phoned him up, Peter Barnes. I said, Peter, I got your deadly text, whatever it was called. He said, yeah. I said, well, I've got a problem. You say I'm banned from Tottenham. I said, I live in the West End of London, and I go see my lovely mum who lives in Waltham Abbey. I have to go through Tottenham. Oh, you said I can't see my mum anymore. Oh, no, I don't think he means... I'm only winding up. You know, goodbye and put the phone down.
Yeah.
But so banned, I think I still am banned.
Yeah.
I haven't been back since.
Oh, really?
And the thing, but Alan Sugar wrote a book recently. I don't plug his book. I've done about three different chapters, all about me.
Okay, well, listen, one of the players you mentioned there during your time working at Tottenham Hotspur is Neil Razor Ruddock, great friend of TalkSport, of course, and he joins us on the line now. Hello, Neil.
Hello, lads. Yeah, I got a letter from Tottenham saying I was banned as well, being associated with you, Eric.
Oh, I remember that. Yes, I do. I forgot about that. Now, no words are lie when I just said...
How are you, monster?
All right, Bubba, how are you?
I'm lovely, mate. The poor player's rich and the rich player's richer.
That's my line. That's like me, yeah.
Neil, the thing is, we've just been talking to Tim Sherwin, and you can see Tim was a more sort of, if you like, disciplined and less high-profile in many ways player than yourself, and I was wondering how that worked. When I see, of course, your personality and Eric's personality, it makes perfect sense he was your agent, yeah?
Yeah, he was brilliant. He'd become a close family friend as well, Eric, you know, so it was a... It was good to work with someone, you know, an agent that you really trusted with your life, and Eric was that sort of mentor.
How did you come to a place, Neil, where you would trust him with your life?
Well, I know. I mean, he used to come to my house for the roast dinners and all the family parties. So, you know, if he let me down, he let me two big brothers down. So he wasn't going to let them down as well.
Hang on.
You know, we had the relationship, so...
Hold on, Neil. You've got big brothers.
I'm the smallest. Yeah,
oh,
I'm the baby.
Oh, my giddy God. Oh, my God.
I've got
okay.
two brothers bigger than me, and harder and uglier than me, which is awesome.
Tremendous, yeah. Tremendous firm, then. Just give us some memory of Eric and how you worked together properly, you know, to get these deals done.
I mean, the thing about Eric, when you went in to see the chairman or the chief exec or whatever it was, you know, I mean, the day I signed for Liverpool, Peter Robinson was there, and Eric was there, and Eric. We went in there, and Eric told jokes for half hour. And I think after an half hour of Eric Paul's jokes, they just give you what you want. So, I mean, that was it. That was his negotiating skills.
And when the players reach the end of their career, 33, 34, whatever it is, and they fall out of contract, do you continue to represent them? Do you continue to have a relationship with them?
Yes.
Well, we did with Eric, but by the time now. So I went into the jungle. Then I got, you know, sort of tied up with the ITV sort of people. They sort of rule your life from them. But, you know, Eric, we still talk. We still get on. And if I need any sort of advice on jobs, I ring Eric and get his advice. You know, he's been in the trade a long time, and he still gives me tips now. So, you know, still a working relationship.
Well, the acid test for this, Neil, is definitely this question: if you had a son. Or a grandson who showed a bit of talent at football, and let's say the clock stopped and Eric was still exactly as he is now, would you recommend him to another young person as an agent?
Definitely. 100%. 100%. I'd recommend him to other people's sons and daughters because not only an agent, he's got a big heart. For a little man, he's got a big heart. So, you know, he's not there to succeed. Yeah, just for his financial gain. He looks after people to help their lives and help their families' lives as well, you know.
Well, I was going to say very quickly, because we've run out of time, is that what he said, that I only had players which I got on with. I want certain players would come to me, like a Gary Mabbutt, mm-hmm. like even Alan Shearer, who's Neil's best mate.
Neil's big mate, yeah.
They wouldn't be an Eric Hall type person. I had the Dennis Suarez, I had the Neil Ruddocks, I had all the John Fadge, all the nutters, all the great characters, the great talent.
Late in 1997, you're one of the leading agents, perhaps the leading agent in English football, one of the most recognisable personalities in the country, for better or worse for that, when you were suddenly struck down with a disease called TTP, thrombocytopenic purpura, to give it a proper name.
Sounds like the after back three.
Absolutely, if they were playing a back three. But TTP is a really, really dangerous disease, and you went through hell. Tell us about it.
Well,
did you feel ill?
No, because until it happened, I wake up in the morning without saying anything rude, went out of bath, which we all do, and things, get ready in the morning, so I was going to do a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
The show I was doing, BBC TV show, it was called All Over the Shop, which Paul Ross was presenting. And it's a very basic show. I have to say this because it's part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
It was a show with, you had different like cheeses, one from Hamleys and one from Harrods, Marks and Spencers or whatever. And you had to taste, you had a little panel on each show, and you had to taste which was the most expensive. So I was doing that show. And so I went to have a wee-wee, excuse my language, and I saw a lot of blood.
Right.
So I panicked a bit, but I thought, no, so the car picks me up to take me to Elstree. So I phoned up my doctor, lovely Dr. Joseph, and I said, I've got this. Told him, don't worry, you'll be all right. You feel ill? No, I feel all right. Just no, when you come and see me. So I do the TV show. I remember that Neris Hughes was on the panel, and the guy, the big fat guy, was in Emmerdale, nice man, Ronald, I think his name. And we did it, actually my team won. Came right back to London. And the doctor looked at me, Dr. Joseph in Wimpole Street, London. And he said, I'm going to take you to go to Harley Street Clinic right away. London Clinic. When I got there, they said, look, I'm going to keep you in the night. You know, there's not something right there. You've got something with your blood. It's not, which might just be an infection or something, but it's not. It's something deeper than that. And that's a lot of stuff. I don't remember. The next thing I know, I wake up in University College Hospital in London. You know, 3-4 miles down the road. No idea, no recollection or anything. What occurred was, they had no idea at London Clinic. I went to a court, I won the case, got money. They had no idea what I had. They thought it was, first of all, E. coli, AIDS, anything to do with blood, I was tested for. They couldn't find it. So my sister, Caroline, heard about it because she'd come see me every day. My mum, I was out of it. I was just, and my nephew, Michael. And they said his days are numbered. Any minute he's going to be dead. Goodbye, Joe. Fate. Monster fate. It was goodbye. They gave up on me. But my sister wouldn't accept it, to be fair. So she phoned a friend of ours who she knew. She said, no, if you've got a blood disease, there's a Professor Sam Machen, worked from the University College Haematology Department, who was the best in the world. That's why the professor. So she phoned him, got hold of him. First, we were busy, but when she said, help it, my ego here, well, it's my brother's Eric Hall, because he read about me in the paper. I've been front page on the news at 10. I was everywhere. I loved it, really. Great ego, man, I loved it.
Yeah, if it wasn't the dying thing, it'd have been great publicity, wouldn't it?
It'd been great publicity. So he heard about this, and he was a football fan, supported Chelsea. So he knew of me very well. Comes to see me that night, and right away, she told him what happened, the symptoms of things. Amazing. To get that man off the machine right away, this machine, get an ambulance, take him back to my hospital.
TTP.
He's got TTP. He knew. Just looking at me, 5 minutes, he knew.
Just to explain to people how ill you were in a coma.
8 weeks in a coma.
I mean, sorry, I can't ask you what you remember about that. But
I don't remember enough.
No, of course not.
I remember the crazy dreams. I don't know if the crazy dreams were true dreams. But I do remember, sort of, I suppose, the dream of for some reason, Bruce Forsyth was in my dream singing a song. And I was people watching him on stage. And then suddenly there were three big nurses and whatever.
That's more like the dream, yeah.
That's more like a dream. No, but my funniest part was, this is a true story, just jumping forward a bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was in hospital for 3-4 months. You know, lost contact. We've got lovely people at Barbara Windsor, from big names, Paul McCartney, sending flowers to me, everything. But you know the old saying, it's not over until the fat lady sings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in my room. I'm now coherent. I'm watching a bit of TV.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching something on TV. It might be football. And I felt tired. So, and the nurse was with me, these big nurses all the time. And were sitting with me that night with a big fat nurse. Big fat nurse. And I was watching TV. I must have dozed off and woke up again. And she stood by my boy's side and she started singing. And I thought, that's it.
Oh, no, the fat lady's here.
The fat lady's here. It went out and I thought, well, it wasn't over. Yeah, I was very, very ill.
We're laughing about it now. Did you think you were going to die, Eric?
Only when she started singing, yes. So if you never ever, and I'm being honest, I never ever crossed my mind that I was going to die, because when the major, major part of my illness was there, I didn't know I was in a coma. So when I've come out of the coma, I'm feeling, you know, not feeling better, you know, but not as bad as I probably was a month or so earlier.
First of all, the obvious question now, years on, are you okay? Does he recur? Is there something you have to look out for?
I'm all right now, but who are you? Where am I?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you then, because, you know, look, we know that you've been talking to us, and there's Eric Hall, the man, and Eric Hall, the boy that grew up in Shoreditch and all the rest of it. And then there's Eric Hall, the act. You know, some of it's your personality, some of it's a bit of an act, because that's the way we all are if you work in the media.
No, that's good.
So let me ask you about this. How did it affect you as a person, Eric, the fact that you were near to death? Or did you just bounce straight back and say, that's nothing to do with me?
I tried to bounce right back, but I'd be honest too that I had quite a few quid in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye. You know, I had a great life. Still having a great life. So, you know, I had no money left as such.
How come? Because it all gone in financial, medical expenses?
I come out there and I thought, you know, I'm going to just spend like crazy. I was covered with booper, so that's why I was in private rooms. I had a great time with that money, I had a great life, and I'm still having a great life. But I bounced back, I suppose, after a few weeks, because it wasn't just bouncing back, which wasn't your question in a way. It was after I was kind of well enough. Yeah, I started grafting again. And I started, the funny thing is,
but the illness hasn't changed you as a person, you don't think?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
It's maybe more aware that, you know, every day is graft. It's not so every day, I was so ill, so every day just sitting relaxed around a swimming pool.
No.
I maybe work more, even harder. I've set up some companies now with my nephew, Michael McPherson's,
mm-hmm.
and Kelly Maloney, and one or two other people. So I'm just the same old Eric Hall.
Well, you are, but let me ask you, because after that terrible experience, you were, as you say, the money dried up for various reasons, and your companies went into liquidation. There was a dispute with other people.
Three companies in liquidation.
And did that not set you back? Did that not make you think, this has all been a great run, but this is all over now?
No, it's never all over.
Until?
No, I both say the same line.
Yeah, no.
No, I've never, because I'm still grafting, Bubbler. I'm still, you know, setting up new companies and TV and radio and companies, production companies with Michael McPherson, a company called West One Media, which we're making.
Well, we'll talk all about that in the last section of the show, because I'd love to know what you're going on now, because even Kelly Maloney, when she was on this show, revealed to me that, too, you're going to get back into boxing. So there's stuff going on there. But let's just say that this period after your illness and all the rest of it, let me just say, when you look back then on what you did as a public celebrity, you still are a celebrity, obviously, but when you were really huge and then the illness brought to an end, what do you think about yourself when you look back on, from, you know, you and the 14-year-old Mark Bowden knocking about together in the amusement arcades, that when you look back on that 25 years when you were in the middle of the madness of Britain in the 70s and 80s, what do you think about it, Eric?
Well, I've never said this to anybody before, except for maybe certain people. When I come out of hospital, I did the whole thing. I never got religious. The opposite. I thought, why me, God? I was buzzing because on the way to this TV show all over the shop, I had a call from, I forget the guy's name now, who was managing Spice Girls. They were making that movie.
Simon Fuller,
lovely Simon, I've known for years. Eric, he says, we're doing a movie with the Spice Girls. We're looking for celebrities to play cameo parts. Are you keen? I said, blah, blah. Yes. We don't have money. I said, don't spend money. Of course, I know you ain't going to cheat me. I want to do it. Yeah, I want to do it. I had this Spice Girls movie lined up. I was also talking to another guy because I used to do a chat show. I was like a bit like they do the Johnny Carter show years ago in America. I was doing a show with Richard Littlejohn on London Weekend where I sat there as the like sidekick, like the other sidekick, Johnny Carson. And the guy, I forget his name, mm-hmm. also Simon somebody, I think, wanted me to join London Weekend, a contract, do the next series with Richard Littlejohn, just as his sidekick. All that was happening, and then suddenly all this happened to me. So I thought, there can't be a God. If there's anybody up there, I don't love to say anybody, it's got to be a devil. Because God don't do these things. Look what he's done to me. One of the most famous, not person, but football agent in the business, writing a column for the Sunday People, getting books, and made a record which sold 3 copies, Monster Cash.
Monster Cash, yeah.
You remember? And, oh, everything was going for me, and this happened. So, you know, for a long, long time, it put my doubts in. Look, if there is somebody out there, it ain't a God, it's a devil.
One thing you've done a lot of since your illness and come back to what you call grafting is you've become a radio presenter. It's really easy, isn't it?
Well, it's not easy, but I love doing it. I love radio. Well, it's easy for me because I'm just Eric on radio. And when I first got a call from BBC Essex, mm-hmm. to do my own show. Now, I'll go back to the thought that another well-known commercial station,
yeah.
Run by, I won't mention his name, Charles Golden. I said, we'll give you a radio show, Eric, your own show. I said, well, yeah, look, if I do a radio show, I've got to do it my way. You know, sound like Sinatra. I said, well, what do you mean your way? I said, well, I don't really talk about football and sports. You know, I'll do that in other shows as a guest. If you really want to give me a show, I know I've got a lot of contacts from still alive then, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis, Connie Francis, went for a whole Brendan Lee, Paul McCartney, Elton John. I know a million people and the football world, you know, a million people in the football world, a sports world. I want to do a show, call it Making Memories.
Mm-hmm.
That's because I had a record which I promoted a few years back of Frankie Lane singing, we're making memories each time we kiss. Great idea of the show. Show about memories. Well, I would have a guest. I might have an occasional football guest on or a sports guest, but just a guest. Talk about play records.
Yeah.
And which I did. And then Charles Golden left this company I'm talking about. And then the BBC phoned me, BBC Essex. Would I do it for them? I said, yeah, great. And I started, yeah, I love it. Because as we said off air, you and I, it's a great medium.
Yeah, it's media and it's internet.
It's nice, it's talking to people directly. And I like to do also, a very integral part of my show being successful, is I like phone calls. I like talking to the public. Getting to sing a song. Probably, do you remember? I remember I did a competition once, and a lot of old people phoned my show. And this poor, like, I played, I think, Calamity Jane, a song Doris Day singing, all the upper stages coming right over the hill. The competition was.
We'll crack away.
Bubba, can you name that singer? The movie was Calamity Jane, and Howard Kill was in it with this lady. She played Calamity Jane. Who am I talking about? Oh, it's a hard one, Eric. Now, probably Gladys from like Hazelmere or somewhere. About 103 she was. I said, well, I'll help you, Bubba. I'll help you. Her first name is Doris and her second name is Day. Oh, she said, could it be Judy Garland? But I love those little things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, great. The public are lovely, lovely.
And you, I'm going to be absolutely frank about it. That show, which I know people in the Essex area loved, you became a victim of the BBC's last round of local radio cuts, where they got rid of people as talented as Danny Baker.
I know. Danny,
and yourself.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it because I was egotistical.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a popular show. Because I believe, especially commercial radio, it's a great pound. They don't realise, not for BBC, they don't worry about that side.
No.
But, you know, the older people are living, thank God for my sake, living much longer now. Their mortgages are paid, their family living wherever they're living. They can spend money to spend. But it was, they're not catered for. I play records, as I say, my guest, Buddy Greco. Victor Moan is still alive.
Wow.
I had on this last Sunday, on a show I did, I won't mention the station, is that my guest was Dame Vera Lynn. Remember on Sunday. What a guest.
Fantastic, yeah, fantastic.
Her daughter, Virginia Lewis, was my secretary at Major Minor Records years ago. So, you know, but the older people love my show. I'm not calling, I'll play anything, which is, I'm not blinkered. I might play an Amy Winehouse or an Adele or an Ed Sheeran. If it could, see, for me, a good song's a record is, I'm sure, Danny Baker.
Mm-hmm.
Not more than you would appreciate it too. A good song could have been written 3 days ago, or 35 years ago, or 45 years ago, or 2 weeks ago.
So you're going to.
Good song's a good song.
You're going to keep up the radio?
I hope so, yeah.
Then you've gone back into sports in different ways and into the sort of boxing. Did you have much...
Well, not so much boxing, no.
No, okay.
Michael McPherson, who works for me and myself, and Kelly Maloney's idea...
Right.
..was because of what he's done, I say he, in the past tense, and become a lady, it's Kelly Maloney, Frank Maloney, but Kelly Maloney. We decided that to start an agency, because he was the best boxing promoter ever. Ever, that's a fact, I believe that. And after you said in your little interviews today, big interviews today, I was quite a well-known sports agent. So we're going to do an agency starting, specialising in women in sport, because they are ignored, women in sport.
How did you find out that Frank Maloney, now Kelly Maloney, had decided to make this huge change in her life?
Well, I was quite shocked. And then one day, Michael McPherson, who works with me, says to me, you got a Twitter or whatever you call these things, a text message from Frank Maloney or Kelly Maloney. I still get a bit, you know, we all do.
It's all right.
He said, could you call it? He said, it must be a moody. It's, you know, somebody winding you up. I said, no, I know Frank well. But still saying Frank then.
Yes,
a few days after the Daily Mirror, well, the Daily Mirror broke the story, front page. So I thought, no, my instinct was, no, that's definitely Kelly Maloney. So I phoned the number he left on my sort of private shtick, and I went, hello, so be a bit careful because it's some nutter.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. And right away, the first was, oh, Eric, thanks for calling me back. But I knew right away it was Frank.
Yeah.
Or then Kelly by then. So he phoned me out of the blue, Eric, I need your help. Not help, I said, oh, you know, got some ideas I want to talk to you about. Because he originally phoned me quite a few years back when he was going to become, try to run for Lord Mayor of London. You might remember that.
I do remember it, yes.
And he wanted me to be, he's always like me. He wanted me to join him as Lord Mayor of London, as the spokesman for Lord Mayor of London.
Right.
And he wanted to make me Minister of Sport in London. You know, the giggle type thing.
Well, I'm not necessarily sure that whether or not Frank would have been a great Mayor of London. I don't know.
No.
But it would be good fun if you'd been a spokesman for the Mayor.
Well, the idea is to make a bit of fun of it and do it properly.
Given that you say you and your nephew are working together, Kelly Maloney and the rest of it, what are your plans for the near future?
Well, we just also started with another couple of guys, Alan Love, ex-actor. We set up a West One Media production company.
Right, we're going to make TV,
TV and movies. And, you know, anybody got any ideas to let us know? And, you know, we've got some money. We've got somebody who's quite prepared to give us money to invest in ideas. So that's all lined up. Now we're just looking for ideas for West One Media.
We know that there's an awful lot of work being done in the background to make a film about Freddie Mercury and Queen. Do you know who's going to play Eric Hall?
Well, Ben Chaplin, a guy called Ben Chaplin, who's quite a good actor.
Yeah, he's got enough awards, certainly.
He's got a few awards. And funny thing is, I mean, Groucho's Club in Dean Street in London, sort of quite a famous-ish...
Media watering hole, let's call it what it is. Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, and somebody says to me, Harry, you know that movie, which they sort of knew about, in the movie business they were?
Mm-hmm.
See that guy over there? Yeah. And I was, thank God I looked at him, he was quite a nice-looking boy, man. He's playing you. I thought, I've got to say hello to him. I must go over to him. So I tapped him on the shoulder. Well, excuse me. Another said, excuse me. Right then, he was shocked. He went, hey, Eric. Oh, I said, yeah. Well, you know who I am. He said, of course I do. I said, I hope you're doing right. Don't forget this bubbler. And I said to him, I'm going to ask you the same question. They asked you one quick question then.
Cool.
It's not going to be in the movie anyway, just to not wind him up to get chatting. What do you say? I said to him, do you say bagels or bagels? He said, I say bagels, said that bubbler. If you're playing Eric Hall, you must say bagels. Because bagels is, so what's you then? What do you say, bagels or bagels?
Bagel.
Bagel. No, yeah. Bagel.
I know. No. Jewish people always say you've got to say bagel. Bagel. Yeah, but of course...
Well, we brought up from Easter. Bagel is like an Americanism, which is okay.
No, I still go to the bagel shop run by Spanish people, of course, in Brick Lane.
Oh, really?
It's still there.
Yeah, I go there all the time.
Yeah, of course. Well, maybe we'll
I must take you one day then to just down the road from the Bethnal Green Road, and the very famous cafe been there for over 100 years, Palicia's.
And what's the speciality there, Eric?
Well, anything.
Yeah?
Your pasta, schmasta, big breakfasts.
You'll enjoy it. Well, you're looking at me and you know that a cafe is not something I pass very easily, absolutely.
No. Well, when I first met you, as I said to you said before, I said to you, some people are built, I've got to say this, you'll be annoyed when I say it, I built like a Greek God, you'll be like a Greek restaurant, but looking at you now, you're built more like a chain of Greek restaurants.
Looking down the road ahead of you, what do you hope for personally, not for your clients, not for the people who see you as, you know, the fantastic large and life personality you've been? What do you hope for yourself, Eric?
Well, you see, no hard question to answer, not at all. I just hope to carry on grafting with this new company we set up. I just graft. I got something I've said to me to kind of answer your question, ish. Eric, you know, you're 60 odd years old, you've done this and you work with Sinatra, Schmaster, whoever, you know, you've met millions, everybody knows you, they call you a legend, which I don't believe in. I like it really. Is, you know, when are you going to retire? And I said to him, well, why would I want to retire? Well, to do the things you've always wanted to do. I said, Bubbler, I've been doing the thing I wanted to do from 13. If I retire, I'm not doing the thing. I love grafting. I want to bring success. I said, this Swiss One Media company we set up with the making movies and TV and the thing with Kelly Maloney. I think it's very exciting. Eric and Kelly together, you know, managing women in sport. It's a great idea. So what I want to do is carry on grafting, be well, carry on grafting, and as I think Neil Ruddock said earlier, is to make the poor player, the poor person rich, and the rich people richer.
And final question, is what you're doing now and what you've done for the last 50 years, is that your idea of happiness, and are you a happy man?
Well, I'm monster happy. I think it's nearly 60 years now I've been doing it for, but yeah. No, you're 50-odd years. Of course I'm happy. I love it. I'm not a schmuck. That's why I won't get in touch, a bit like we briefly were saying with Tim Sherwood, is that I'll only look after players who I want to look after. You know, there's no time for... I've made a few quid. I've made a few quid and lost more than a few quid, but I'm still grafting. And it ain't for the money. Got to live. But I just enjoy grafting. I like success. Somebody says to me, Eric, what's the best deal you've ever done? I'll say the last one.
You've been listening to an archive edition of Talk Sport's My Sporting Life with Danny Kelly. Thanks for listening, and make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Acast, and Spotify for more top Talk Sport content.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.